Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 23rd episode. I can't believe it. 23 of No Spin Rodeo. I'm Tommy Joe Lucia. Producing the show is Greg Teagarden with Piranha Productions and the First Lady of Pro Rodeo. Whoa! Did you fall out of the chair?
My candle that's propping up my phone fell over.
So I'm going through this big Bob Tallman spiel for you, and you fall out of the chair. Do you need a seatbelt?
I didn't. Now, how's this? I'm trying to prop my phone up so that it's not awkward. Okay. The candle behind it fell over. All right. Sorry.
I'll start over one. And the First Lady of Pro Rodeo Journalism, our favorite, Ms. Kendra Santos. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Well, it always seems like a struggle. And Kendra makes us, she's like, it's time to do a podcast. I'm like, oh, really? Already? And it's been 2 weeks. So
life.
Well, speaking of life, what's everybody got going on? Let's do a little coffee time. Greg?
Well, we're sitting here in Lexington, Kentucky, getting ready for the Road to the Horse. Fabulous event. It's on, anybody want to catch it? It's on Rock Weekend and Pluto TV. But yeah, it's a
event
where horse trainers have a limited amount of time with a wild Mustang, and at the end they get to ride a obstacle course that they can either make it or break it. So I fell in love with this event like 10 years ago.
It's a great show. Is that event still put on by Tootie Bland?
Tootie rode off into the sunset.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, she did a great job building it, but it's owned by guys who own West
Media. Tina, the head coach of a PBR's team, she's here running it. And for those of you that don't know about Pluto TV, because it amazes me that people haven't figured this out yet. So all of you that are out there and hear Pluto TV, oh, it's another, I'm not buying another streaming app. By the way, it's free. You can download the Pluto TV app if you choose on your television or on your phone. And there are 100 channels on there that are free. Now, they have commercials just like regular TV, but you can watch this stuff in the palm of your hand. PBR events, all the stuff on Ride Pass. You just download it. You give them a fake email address if you need to.
I don't even think you need to give them anything. I think you download the app, turn it on.
People are like, oh, we don't have Pluto TV. I'm like, why? It's free. Like, you can watch Ride Pass if you want. Plus, there's all kinds of channels. So, there you have it. Kendra, what's going on in your world?
Well, I'm working on some big stories as usual. The one I'm working on at this moment is actually pretty interesting because it is about the buckle of 1949 world champion team roper Ed Yanez. His long gone, of course, and his son died last summer, and his dying wish was that he asked a friend to find the best permanent home for his world championship buckle. And so this friend of his called me and said, okay, what do you think? And so this is the whole story. So it's pretty interesting, and it's hard to find people who knew him who are still alive, you know, but to find out about this guy who won the world in 1949, and then to know about, you know, a little bit more about his son. But it's a pretty cool caper to be involved in. I think it's pretty neat, actually.
It sounds cool. Well, that's why you're the First Lady of Journalism, because you come up with cool stories like that. Hey, Greg, what do we have in feedback? We had a lot of people reach out to me after our last episode, both on a personal level, which I thought was really cool. Even some asking if I meant it, am I going to listen? And I said yes. So, Greg, what did we have for feedback? And then maybe we can kind of talk about the interaction of our last episode before we get kicked off.
It was all positive feedback. A lot of people, you know, thanking us for making and, you know, just kind of getting it out there and kind of brushing the stigma off of it and letting everybody, you know, hear about, you know, Joe B and Brett. There was a little bit of, you know, what do we do now? What's the steps moving forward? Where do we go?
Yeah, I got some feedback that you guys didn't tell us what to do about it. And we kind of did. I mean, in one way or another, we said, if you know somebody, you need to listen to them and be available. You know, there's helplines. You gave some helplines out there if you want to take that route. But it seems like the most successful. You know, what's amazing me is I started thinking back of the people that I've known in my life that I've lost to depression leading to suicide. And I could not believe how long the list was. Like,
same.
And the other thing that another feedback I got that I thought was interested is that we should encourage, I don't know how you do this, but we should encourage family members to not be embarrassed about the way they're, you know, what happened, because that leads, I'm not advocating this or not advocating, and I'm just kind of, that leads to the stigma around not admitting that you're depressed or suicidal or in a bad place. And I thought it was interesting because this last year, we took our Utah Cowgirl Collective girls to this Western store, I won't name the name, and we filmed a deal of them getting Justin and Wranglers. And the manager of the store was there, and I spent, Kendra, I probably spent an hour visiting with him. Super nice guy. 4 days later, he takes his own life. He's got a big family. And my point to that was in the obituary, which I thought was interesting, they explained in the obituary he had been suffering from depression and things like this. And, you know, if you know somebody, get help. And usually it's just like, you know, we lost somebody because nobody, you know, they're embarrassed with the stigma.
Well, and I feel like our most important bottom line for the last episode was to say that it's actually a sign of strength and not weakness to seek help and to seek others and to reach out, you know, and like find those people in your innermost circle that you can call at 3 a.m. if you need to. But, you know, you're not weak if you're feeling these things. And I had text message, phone calls, you know, social media messages, which I'm not good at checking. So please don't people use that. But I had so many people like you reaching out, and I was kind of amazed and also proud of how many family members of like top 15 type cowboys who reached out. And I would have had no idea by watching their sons compete or interviewing them or knowing them as people that maybe they deal with, you know, depression or anxiety or, you know, some of the stuff that we talked about. And I was super proud of them for being brave enough to say something. And, but that lets me, you know, say back to them, hey, I can be on your list, you know, or whatever. And what, you know, what can I do to help you? And one of the people that was my favorite, most meaningful person to hear from was Brock Cresta's mother, Kelly. And Brock did not commit suicide, but, you know, a few years ago at 25 years old, we lost him. And I'm not talking out of turn here. I did a very public story with his family and his friends and the person who did the autopsy, you know, at Cheyenne when he died. And like the guy put it to me who did the autopsy, the bottom line is Brock died unintentionally due to the combination of prescription pain pills and alcohol. So, you know, he goes to a concert, but you know, a few months before the last, one of the last, not the last, but one of the most recent photos that I have, you know, before he died back in March, he died in July, was of Brock being, you know, sweet smiling Brock at the timed event, getting help in sports medicine, and his upper body is bruised stem to stern from the bulldogging at the timed event. And that is what, you know, where the pain pills came from, not because he was a drug addict, but because he hurt like hell. His ribs were bruised. He had, you know, he hurt. So, you know, and then you go have a few beers at the concert. And basically the guy who did the autopsy said to me, I'll never forget. He's like, it was just the perfect storm. You know, that combination, you know, those alcohol and those pain pills are both depressants. And it's like his body got so relaxed that it didn't breathe. And so this all falls into the same conversation, and it's a tough one, but you know, Brock didn't want to die, but that can happen. And then, you know, Joe even said on the podcast, like, he's talking to me about my son, Taylor. We're headed to Nashville for him to have hip surgery next week. Cause like Joe's like, tell Taylor to get the hip fixed, you know, hips fixed before the pain pills. Tell, you know, we need Weston Hughes to get his back fixed before he gets on the pain pills, because Joe's been down that road and he was very open. And that open conversation is so appreciated. And it's not because people are weak, but I'm like, I never would have dreamt, you know, Taylor is tough. Like most of all these young men and women are tough, but you get to a certain level of pain and, you know, the self-medicating, all that we talk about. Anyway, let's keep the door open on the conversation at least, right?
Yeah. And what I noticed is I had some people call and I said, well, you know, you can call me anytime. And in that conversation, I realized that maybe I wasn't being as approachable, right, as I should have been, right? And then I had the comment, well, I didn't really want to bother you. And I said to them, I said, do you realize that any of your friends, if you ask them at the end of the day, would you rather me have bothered you or call me at 3 o'clock? Every one of your friends would have said, why didn't you? Why won't you? Please call me. So right. A lot here in our sport.
So the next thing I thought, shall we talk about the American?
Absolutely.
We got some feedback about that.
You want to go first on that?
We're kind of upset. We couldn't watch it live. I mean, it was, you know, it's a huge event, and you got to wait 24 hours to watch the preliminary rounds and then a week to watch the finals. I mean, by that time, you know, all the social media is going to have all the runs out on it. So, you know,
so, okay.
Tough,
so I've asked a lot of questions. Yeah. That's my job of that crew. And so it's a great conversation to have. So I would love, there are two things, including television, that really stood out to me. And I was there. I would say up front, and I'll hopefully end on a high note too, like with both the American and Houston, which we'll also talk about, is I hope that, you know, I said the same thing about Fort Worth when they were talking about, you know, Cody Teal's child situation. Like, I don't want to, I hope we won't throw, what is the saying? Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater or something like that. Like I want to see the good. Okay. So like, okay, let's take the American. The American, richest one day rodeo on the planet, correct? $2.1 million paid out in one day. The road to the American with those lead up regional events and the contender finals paid out $1.5 million. Over $35 million has been paid out in 11 years. So to me, that is significant. Like, let's remember that while we continue this conversation. And so this year alone, $3.6 million paid out. Okay. So the two greatest complaints, definitely. Let's just take TV first. And then the second one is going to be a cowboy winning the barrel race. So yes, the long round of 10 was, the rodeo was Saturday night. It was Sunday on Fox Sports 1, just to lay the facts out. And then the final four was a week later, a week after the actual event on Fox, which is, you know, okay. So one, I will say also up front, we are gleefully spoiled by the Cowboy Channel, right? Like my deal, I love it when like Fort Worth, San Antonio and Houston are on because I set it to record and then it's like my absolute, I just can't wait to get all my work done. And I don't care what time it is late at night, but I get to watch the rodeo and it's like, it's a joy and we all love it. Fabulous. So that's, I think that of course has everything to do with why people were so accustomed to seeing rodeos live now that's why people are, you know, mad. So I will say, and because I continue to ask and I will continue to ask that Teton Ridge says they're absolutely working on the TV component already, you know, for next year. An official source that's not Teton Ridge tells me that there is an actual like baseball game conflict or something that they're trying to work around as far as getting on the live schedule. That is, again, secondhand and unofficial. Go ahead.
So did you hear anything about why they didn't put it on the app? I mean, they have an outlet. I mean, I'm sure there's probably some legality with the Fox. Well, my understanding,
if I did ask the question, if I understood it correctly, it was, for one thing, the current administration at Teton Ridge is dealing with contracts that were in place before they joined the team. And so they are aware that they would prefer, they're kind of working within the parameters, but live streaming it and then having the delay was not something I don't believe Fox was going to go for that, which is understandable, right?
Well, that's typically written in and you can negotiate that out. But if I had to guess, Fox wants to know the pure numbers, right? What came to find us. And that's dampened by the immense coverage. By the way, I'll say the American, without exception, in my opinion, has the greatest amount of social media coverage, whether it's their efforts or everybody else's efforts, people showing up, very, very well covered. And you can find with a Google what happened at the American relatively quickly. And that doesn't help driving people, you know, to a week later.
Which hurts the numbers. But on a good note, I will say, you know, one thing that they're saying, which I absolutely can agree with, is we are trying to expose rodeo to mainstream audiences and new fans. We're trying to create more following for the Western world. I would guess that Fox doesn't understand that their thunder was stolen by like social media and stuff like that. But I just hope, you know, of course we all want it to be live. And I'm assuring you that the people who are in place there now also want that. It's like the current PRCA administration telling me a year or so ago that they were still having to deal as best they could with existing multi-year contracts that were in place from the previous administration. So I do believe there's some of that in play. These people, they're smart. And I'll also say to the people who are just plain like rude and hateful, I would say the lead producer on All American Television used to run the Cowboy Channel, everybody, in case people don't know that. Like Tommy Joe, you and I go back with him back to our PBR days, you know, a very renowned television producer. So it's not like, oh, these horrible people who know nothing about rodeo. When they put out a product, it tends to be a beautiful, you know, high-end product. They know, they've heard, they know they're not dumb. Live is where, you know, where it needs to be. The actual quality of the product, I've never heard anybody say anything less than top notch. Have you guys?
Here's the deal. they spend the money to produce that show. So it wasn't that they weren't live because they didn't have every bell and whistle. Because I know what Joe does. There's not a finer producer.
And we both have been in that team in the, you know, recent years. So we do know that behind the scenes, they're adamant about producing a great product.
Here's the thing.
Which they do.
Those of us that live right in the nest, all of you armchair headers and healers, I understand you want to see it live and you love rodeo. And I agree with you, Kendra. The Cowboy Channel has spoiled people. They'll watch rodeo in any form or fashion. As long as they can see the animal and the person, they're okay with the show. However, in order for this sport to grow, please be patient, because our goal is to get a top level television product in front of new fans, which is exactly what the Fox Sports relationship did and what the American did. So I understand from our diehard rodeo, wish I could watch it after I wrote my story, Kendra. I get that. But part of the growing pains, because I would be upset if this was a poor product on a major platform like Fox. It's not. It's great.
Right.
So.
Agreed. Agreed. And I think I may have used the term growing pains in something recent that I wrote, because yes, I mean, there are, you know, there are going to be some issues, and yes, there's always something, but I mean, again, $35 million, the haters need to check themselves a little bit here, because do they want it to go away? The players don't want it to go away.
Well, the thing to think about, and this is the negative that I'll throw out there. This is, I'll probably get darted from our listeners. The problem is we need to take the top 12 or 15 rodeos in the nation, highly produce them for broadcast, and put them in a consistent fashion on big TV. That's just the truth.
Because, you mean like what the PBR does on CBS?
Well, yeah. And the thing about it is because here's what happens. We're always fighting against this circus kind of thing where, oh, look, there's a rodeo on, and they watch it and they think it's kind of neat. But you become a sports fan when you know who the players are, when you start to understand the sport. And that happens with putting a high-level product in front of the major non-endemic fans in a, you know, consistent platform. And then all of a sudden, because the same thing happened with me with IndyCar. I started in IndyCar. I didn't even know which way they went. Well, by the time we were done with IndyCar, the amount of respect that I had for IndyCar drivers, the fact that their wheels are going 230 miles an hour and they're open, and if they touch anything, they die. This is stuff that I didn't know because I never was exposed to it on a consistent basis. The same thing happens in rodeo. Greg, what say you? I know you've been, I've been interrupting you.
Oh yeah. No, I feel that this is it's a good product. It's unfortunate that it is going to probably lose a little bit of its luster by waiting a week to get it, you know, viewed. But like I said, the team behind them, great. The show is great. It is actually a really good show for non-rodeo people to watch, because they do a great job showing what's happening, explaining it, showing how it is. And we all know that rodeo can be a little confusing to somebody new, just because of all the terms and rules and everything like that. And plus, you're talking about, you know, seven different events, you know, that you got to kind of, you know, get a grasp on. So, but I think the American is good. I kind of agree with Tommy that the bigger rodeos need to get pushed out to major networks or major mainstream, you know, outlets, and that'll help this.
What has prohibited sport grow that bigger in the past has been the expense of it.
Well,
so, no, yeah,
yes. Well, but it's right votes? Now. It's right now that the major networks are actually considering a cowboy hat an okay thing, because they're seeing numbers on Paramount Plus, right? It's all about the dollar. And it was, rodeo 10 years ago was less as enchanting from a money perspective in New York City, right? I mean, the PBR has taken a team to New York City. So there's immense growth within the industry. And we have to, the thing I'm worried about is we have to continue to put out our best product to these right. consumers. And which, the other right. thing that just gets up my craw, and this is changing directions, but I got to say it. All of you people who think Teton Ridge is owned by China, oh my God. It's, by the way, just on the record, Teton Ridge is not owned by China. Okay? I can't tell you how many people come up and go, you work for the Chinese. No, they're not. And they have a very talented team around them that has taken a relatively slow approach besides the American to where they fit in the scheme of this overall product. But you're talking about a company that is not Chinese owned, by the way, fully American, spends money at an NFR, adds $4 million at the end of the day to everybody's pockets. Plus, that's not even counting all of the contractors, the announcers, all of these people, right? Music guys, cameramen. You know, you're talking about closer to probably $10 million of infusion into our sport. So get off their back. They're not being run by ATM, you know.
And I agree with you. And back to my point, what I was talking about specifically about putting rodeo on network television and the expense. You'll remember with me a few PRCA administrations ago when Commissioner Steve Hatchell brought the association to the brink of bankruptcy by doing things like spending millions of dollars on television. And so Teton Ridge is spending the money to put this super high-end product on network television. So again, it's like, man, you know, if we could see the good while we're at it, it would be fantastic. So the second big one on water cooler talk from the American clearly was that a cowboy won $1.1 million in the barrel race. First time a man's won the barrel race at the American. And I will speak for the people around Oat and myself. They broke out booing. And I think I wrote about this, but I think that generally speaking, people's intentions were good. They thought they were, as I put
their
it,
standing intentions
up,
were good from their booing.
So I know. I think that what they were doing was standing up for the little ladies in barrel racing. Okay. The little okay, do you guys made me up bum? stop it, because I do. This was, I am not going to name any names or even describe people that were doing this. When Jordan Briggs, world champion barrel racer, when her husband is in the crowd and gets not once but twice pushed and accosted for clapping for Brandon Cullins, and himself called a fag for clapping for this male barrel racer who is about to marry a beautiful fellow badass barrel horse trainer in Emily Eford. And no need to even go there, but it's like, really? Okay. Let me just say, JB Mooney and back to the American, And the fact of whether or not they might know what they're talking about. Okay, Katie Kaufman is on their show. She's a total rodeo sweetheart. JB Mooney, you know, the winningest bull rider of all time. Luke Branquino, 5-time world champ. Haley Kinzel, Jackie Crawford. Like, they have an all-star lineup. But JB is who I want to bring up on the Brandon Cullins thing because it kind of surprised me. So I was disappointed that I blocked hundreds of people for like every single person who was like, I can't believe a homo won the American and block, into the night, Saturday night at the hotel after the rodeo. I was like, are you kidding me? Really? Because I don't care if he was gay. And by the way, a few short years ago in Alabama, a young man barrel horse trainer was beaten to death on the street for being gay. So that's a whole nother subject, but give me a break, folks. Anyway, so JB put up a video the next day, and I'm like, my hero. Like, JB and I don't, his vocabulary, it's, there's one word that stands out. You know, he smokes, he drinks, he does all these things that maybe I don't do. But I loved, he puts up a video because he passes Brandon driving out of there, out of Arlington. Brandon's driving his own horse. It's not like he's some guy that has a driver or whatever. And this little video, and JB puts, Brandon Cullen's head of the bank, 1.1 million richer and zero F-U-C-K-S given to all the haters. And I'm like, attaboy, JB. I loved that. Because, I mean, it's true, right? And so, like, Brandon, by the way, Brandon, who rode in an old beat-up saddle that his fiance bought used a while back, Brandon, who Monday was at the 377 Arena jackpot in Stephenville, Texas, getting a few young horses out and won $188 that day. Brandon, who didn't smile when he was on stage because he knew, he shut his social media off before the American because he knew if he had any success, he knew how special that horse was, and he knew if he had any success, he would be blasted. And sure enough, the haters came in force. So I spent Sunday with delayed flights and whatever, and I forced myself, you're not going on social media. But Monday, I reached out to Sherry Servey, Haley Kinzel, Jordan Briggs, Brittany Posey Tanazi, Cassie Mowry, Lisa Lockhart. And I'm like, what say you? Well, they were fired up. And they, so anyway, and I'll back up a step. No one booed Adon Banuelos when he beat Morgan Cromer, man beating a woman in the cutting at the American Performance Horseman the night before. No one batted an eye. That's because, you know, in equestrian sports, Olympic jumping, same way. Dressage, same way. You know, all these equine, you know, cutting, reining. Doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. And like this panel of badass barrel racers, they all had different points and they were amazing points. But I think we all agree, we three surely agree, correct me if I'm wrong, like, I don't know anybody who's in favor of allowing a man, a biological male, into women's sports when there's a physical advantage from being a biological male. That just seems silly, like silly. But barrel racing, though, what we're familiar with at the rodeos, because it's the Women's Professional Rodeo Association, we're familiar with women. But barrel racing historically, like these, you know, kingpin women set the record straight. It's like, barrel racing is not a women's event. And if you go to the, you know, big jackpots and fraternities and all that, like, there are amazing for years and decades and, you know, for forever, amazing men trainers and riders, like, and the women think nothing about it. And like some of them said, it, you know, the days of it being like manhandling these horses with brute strength and stuff, those things, those are long over. You don't win doing that anymore. It's about finesse now. So the men have no physical advantage. If anything, as Jordan said, you know, the men outweigh us. So there are jockeys packing more weight. So I feel like this was a case where, and a lot of times if we can just, you know, state the facts, the truth, it diffuses the situation and it really flips the conversation for those women to step forward. And the text message I got that night from Brandon Cullens, who I've never met, he said, it was like heartbreaking to me. I cried. It was like, I had not smiled or allowed myself to even think about it or be happy. People ask me all day at the jackpot, you know, how does it feel? And I didn't feel anything because I knew if it mattered to me, then everybody would just try even harder to take it away from me. So I wouldn't let, but after reading that, and he said, he cried and it took him a few hours to kind of soak it in. And then he smiled for the first time knowing that he actually has people who are willing to stand up for him. We're kind of back to our mental health, you know, conversation again in a way, because it's like you're assumed all sorts of bad things about you if outside of the barrel racing world when you step into our this huge stage in rodeo. Anyway, I do think that the facts really helped this situation. And hopefully moving forward, people won't just jump to be hateful when they know they don't know what they're talking about. I don't want to just own the conversation, but
this isn't the first year, right? This isn't the first year that men have, I mean, they've been in the American, or at least been able to compete the whole time, right?
And one thing I say about the American, everybody loves the storylines. There was a 16-year-old girl in the finals too. Like, she could have won it just as easily, as Lisa Lockhart pointed out. Lisa Lockhart hit a barrel. You know, Emily Beisel's all about this guy winning it. I believe she won second, right? And like, they're standing up and going, he deserved it. Best rider, best horse that day, that's who you always want to win. May the best man, woman, whatever, win on any given day. And him and that mare, Seeger, were it. And also, like, we didn't really even get to the point of talking about that mare's owners, but it's like Grant and Rael Little, she's a Canadian Hall of Famer, NFR barrel racer. She trained that horse, and she chose Brandon to be the jockey here. What a compliment to him. And a further compliment, when Jordan Briggs got hurt in 2021, the first person she called to ride her horses at the fraternities and derby, in Rollo's case, was Brandon Collins. Brandon is the only person who's ever competed on Rollo, her world championship horse, besides her. That's how much trust and respect she has for this guy as a horseman. And
well, it's not the first time they've had a little bit of conflict in the barrel race. And, you know, they let younger riders, and I've been a part of discussions of, it's not fair because a little girl that weighs 19 pounds, and I always say this, or here's been my take, and this is my take, it's a horse race, right? And the best, the fastest time wins. And if a 9-year-old girl can handle a hybrid horse going that fast and not make any mistakes, I think they deserve to win. And here's the deal. If you only want to watch women in barrel race, then you watch a WPRA barrel race. You know, it's just another example of tradition and narrow-mindedness, the core keeping us from expanding, because it's silly. It's just silly.
Also, perhaps some jealousy factor, because this was Brandon Cullen's sixth time at the American. He's hit a barrel there to win it all before. No one batted an eye when he didn't win. The hate has come from him winning, which to me is the issue.
Well, and it seems to me that a lot of people just like drama, right? If they got nothing to talk about, they create drama because their life and their cat and their television's boring. I'm just saying. So I think it's silly that we're having to have a conversation. I think it's silly that people, like, it irritates me, right? Congratulations. Fantastic job. I mean, won by like 0.3 seconds. It wasn't like, I mean, he kicked their butt, right? It was fantastic. So
it was, yeah, amazing. And for the record, he and the owners of that horse are following standard protocol, which is you take the entry fees out, which there are none at the American, and then owner and rider splits. So the Littles got $550,000 and Brandon Collins got $550,000. And as soon as he marries his bride, they're going to put it toward paying off their place and to build a barn in Stephenville, Texas. And that's cool. Good for them. Yeah.
That's how Chad built his.
So somebody's life was changed here, you know, in our world. So way to go. Shall we move on to Houston?
Gladly.
Okay. So 50 grand that counts, and in all cases, more than 50 grand because of what they won along the way in their Super Series and the semifinals. That, like, the so Monday morning after Houston, every event, the world standings are completely shaken up, right? So the standout story to me, and I know a lot of other people, was the Harris brothers in the calf roping, right? So for anybody who's living under a rock, Ty Harris, five-time NFR calf roper, and his little brother Joel Braden find themselves in the final four. Were both 8-2, right? Both of them rode Ty's little bay horse Mo. They rode the same horse. They didn't change ropes. They didn't adjust the stirrups. Nothing. It was like 8-2, and then the other one jumps on and is 8-2. It was crazy in such a cool way. And then so they had a rope off, and Joel Braden went first and was, I believe, 9-2 plus 10. And then Hurricane Big Brother was 9-6, won it. But those two boys got out of Houston with a combined $85,250. It was so cool. Ty, I thought it was interesting that Ty, without missing a beat, called it the best day of his life, which is really interesting when you consider that Ty won 600 grand at the American last year, right? But what happened between him and his brother there, what they did together, they were both in the corner kicking the dirt out of the box, you know, and in the corner helping each other get out of the barrier, doing all the things and clapping for each other. It was really cool. And I watched Joel Braden hasn't been to the NFR yet, but I watched him. He ran the extras at the NFR last year. It was fun to watch their mom. Ty had a terrible NFR last year, but their mom was there videoing Ty in the rodeo and then videoing Joel after the rodeo running the extras. And I just thought, you know, that's like a great day for a rodeo family. Like that, it's kind of like what happened to the Sorys at Pendleton and steer roping last year. It was like 1-2, the brothers, you know. I mean, that's just like fairy tale stuff. And so how can you not be so happy, you know, for their family? And like, Ty was like, you know, the money will come and go, but what just happened here, nothing cooler could ever happen to me. So that was super neat. So while we're in Houston, we got to talk about replay. They talk, you know, they came out ahead of it and said, you know, made a point to say, hey, everybody, we're going to use replay for the finals. And they specifically said, am I boring you?
No, it's just been a long day.
Okay, sorry. They specifically said circumstances in the finals only that we're going to use replay for. Jerk down in the tie down, the barrier, crossfire in the team roping, missing one out in the buck and horse events, or fouls in the ref stock. Okay, and there are two calls from what I'm seeing and from watching the telecast and social media that are the most talked about. One, Tanner Ross missing one out. Some say to win it in the bareback riding. Two, the Shad Mayfield call in the tie down in the 10 round. So for one, was this or was this not the first time instant replay has been used at a PRCA rodeo?
Well, it's the first time that they let it impact the final results. You know, I had a discussion with PRCA officials about instant replay after the NFR. And interestingly enough, the PRCA during the NFR ran a instant replay system and review and compared the data, right? Which I think is smart. That's good. So they went in and, you know, are looking back at what the calls were and how many times they were right. And it's amazing to me in pro sports, for instance, baseball, where the guy slides in, the umpire on the field in a split second makes the call. You think he's wrong. You look at replay, and 90% of the time, those guys get it right, and I don't know how they do it. Now, I want to bring up a couple things. SI, who does a nice job with their recaps and their engagement in rodeo, talked about the adding the replay challenge. And I found it interesting because they interviewed a Houston official, and I'm trying to find the exact language here, but they a missed mark out, crossfire, Jordan out, broken barrier. So the way they did it, which I, because you and I haven't had the instant replay battle yet that we've been saying we were going to have. This has been going on. The PBR does it. The ERA did it originally, by the way. Then WCRA and the American. As this is all historical replay stuff. And my problem, like with the PBRs, is the fact that anybody can challenge. So you know how that big red button, you can hit the button? Well, I can jump over and challenge if a guy made it for 8 seconds, literally, and pay the $500 fine. I think that slows down production. It's interesting to me because Houston did it with the PRCA exactly the way I think it should be done, and they called it a confirmation of call. And here's what I have asked to do at Salt Lake City, and I think they were waiting to see how Houston went. I said, can I put a pro official that actually understands how to watch angles and replays, it can't just be anybody, they got to be good at that, in a booth with a separate director and all the camera angles, and all they're doing is reviewing all the calls. They're looking at it, right? And if they see something that they want to look at again, what I wanted to do at mine is say, they let us know that this last run's being reviewed for X, right? Whatever it is. Now, some of that's common sense. If a guy misses one out, you know, they're going to look and see if he really missed them out. And that replay judge has the authority to reverse the call based on undeniable video evidence. So if they watch it and they're like, it's not strong enough to overturn it, they can't. But if the replay shows that the call was wrong, that judge would have the ability. And so this happens during the live show because all of the negatives on this are, this takes too long in the live show, nobody wants to do it, It screws up production. Well, if we're going to be big boy sports, then the big shows that have the ability, like Houston, Fort Worth, us at Days of 47, have the ability to have multiple cameras and the ability to look at it quickly. You know, the way they did it with this confirmation of call, my point is I like that. And so I'm hearing or seeing through social media, well, why didn't they do it here? Why didn't they do it there? What happened here? My assumption, and I haven't had time to call and verify this, is that all those runs were reviewed and that the judge in the booth did not have enough video evidence, whether you agree or not. Like I said, I haven't looked at specific instances, you guys, on that particular show to overturn it. So, you know, I like it. You know, the big thing for me that I would like to get to the bottom of, and I don't really know, and that's Chad Mayfield. You know, what's the story with Chad and how it relates to instant replay? Because what I heard at another water cooler with no, these are not secret spies or official people, but I heard that Chad actually, after he roped his calf in that final round to wind it, said, I didn't turn him over correctly. That's what I heard. I have no proof of that. And then at that point, the replay judge replayed down and said they were going to flag him out. Now, the interesting thing is, in this particular situation, reminds me of other sports, we see social media posts from people that don't agree, even family members. I mean, this stuff happens in Dak Prescott's mom of the Dallas Cowboys got on and said, Dak wants to be traded. He doesn't want to be at the Cowboys. And then he had to come on and go, hold on, mom. Let's visit about this. I never said it. And if you follow other sports, you see this stuff happen because you can't stop Uncle Charlie from representing you on social media of what he thinks you should do. And then he pretends like it's what you're thinking. So I don't know. I don't know if you, Kendra, know, Greg, if you've heard. I know I saw Chet did this number, right? Which, you know, could say, are you looking at the replay or I flipped him over? Again, I haven't talked to him, and we should follow up with a conversation to see if we can find out the truth here. But it cost him, you know, it cost him a big event.
Well, and I'll say, and because I haven't spoken to him directly about this, I will say nothing about that. And you know, that, you know, the twirling of the finger could also, maybe the flag had already been waved. That could also have meant, please review it. We don't know firsthand, so we won't say, but I will also say in the preliminary Super Series rounds, they had, you know, after what we went through watching Bo Cooper with the barrier last year, they had some significant barrier issues in some of the Super Series, including one specific case, like with Will Loomis. And there were other guys in his set also. But, I mean, Will, it was like, here comes, they put 10 on him. But here, you know, you can watch the video. There was no neck rope on the steer. And the barrier's pulled, and there's not even a neck rope on the steer. So it's like, I struggle with that if and I don't even know who the line judge was, don't care. But just generally speaking, I struggle. If that's your entire job to watch the line, that's the only thing you're there for is to watch the line. So how you could miss that the steer didn't even have a neck rope on, that's a hard one for me to.
Well, and justify. They were doing replay, by the way, the entire time, just not implementing it so that they knew it worked. So they had Houston paid for the judge to be there the entire time. They were working through making sure that he had the camera angles and that all these things were right. But that goes to my argument, Kendra. The right person should win. And if you go to always. Thinking about, yeah, this repetition with judges, you know, we all make mistakes. And it irritates me when I hear from a judge, it's like, well, what, you don't trust me? It has nothing to do with trust you. Were you at the right angle to make the right decision? Why wouldn't we use it in the places where we have significant camera angles, and if the verdict is clear and undeniable,
right?
Video,
well,
evidence.
Also, okay. Also, a year or two down the line from here, it's really likely, actually, that in that situation, Will Loomis would know. Here's what he could do to challenge the call, and it'll get made right. Right now, what I did see in the form of, I guess you'd call it progress, whatever you want to call it, in the bulldogging at Houston, after San Antonio using that same rule about the dog falls, you know, in San Antonio, there was a few like deer in the headlights, like, wait a minute, why didn't I get a flag? You know, people weren't, you know, the slow falls or wadding them up in half or whatever. People weren't aware of the ground rules or whatever. Clearly, people were aware. By Houston, guys were not taking their hands off the steer without looking up and somehow making sure that the flag was dropped or that, you know, time was stopped or whatever. So that, you know, but as we move forward, you know, the most we can ask for is that, A, when it's a matter of human opinions, that they're giving it their very best shot and they're an expert opinion. And also in general, that we continue as a sport to make progress. Right? Because everybody wants, may the best man win, of course.
I just don't think challenging, I don't, if you're going to be a sport, right, I don't think that the player has to challenge the call. I know that comes from the coaches challenging, but at the end of the day, put up the right equipment to where you can make a call. So it didn't matter if they challenged it or not, Kendra, the right decision's being made. If there's clear video evidence that wasn't a neck rope on the steer, that judge says, hold on, this is under review. Hold on, guys. That steer didn't even have a neck rope on. That would be easily provable on replay. Why wouldn't we do it? And specifically, why wouldn't the PRCA take some of their money that they've got in the bank and put this into effect in these rodeos that can literally put you in a half a year's advantage to winning a gold buckle? Now, I see it in a $500 out of, I get it. But the top 10, 15, I don't know what it is, but if you're winning 20,000 or more, that there's two crimes here. You know, you're blessing somebody with the chance of getting a gold buckle. You're taking away somebody who didn't get it right from them. You know, it's just, I think the PRCA should put it on the road, right? Perfect it. Put it on the road. If you're an X level rodeo, this is here and we're bringing it.
Anybody would argue that.
Yeah, it's just silly.
Right. Nobody would argue that. So back to you know, seeing every bit of good at a great rodeo. That yes, there were. We end up talking about the one haze, the hazer misses when he hazed 15 to perfection, right? So Houston, so you know, Leighton Berry in the bareback riding wins it back to back, $53,750, badass. Yaquo and Hawkins won the team roping. Damian Brennan won $56,750 in the bronc riding. Dakota Eldridge, I think it was his second Houston title. $56,750.
Here's an interesting side note that I want to throw in before you continue. I kept hearing, you know, Shad, he's won so much money. He's going to have such a big lead. He could go have surgery, da-da-da-da-da. Here's what I found interesting. Damian, right now, as a number one, has the most money won of anybody in the leaderboard with $106,000, which is like $3,000 more than Shad. He's had a really good year. So I thought that was interesting, right? He's got more money in the bank than anybody. Oh, I'm sorry, continue.
And Damian, is he not like the reigning college champ? I feel like he tied for the championship with a kid from Cal Poly last year. Did he not?
I think so. And he's from a town in Australia of like 400 people.
That's so awesome.
Like, it's a cool story. It's just he's a typical Australian.
So, okay. So Dakota Eldridge, $54,250 in the bulldogging. Leslie Smoligo, $58,000 in the barrel race. Jackie Crawford, $55,250. That's one of the one things that she had not already won. Her husband Charlie's won it. And Creek Young had a bull rider, $154,000 week, winning the American and $54,000 at Houston. That is really cool. And before we get out of town on Houston, Leon Coffey's last day in the barrel after 31 years, inaugural Hall of Fame, Charmaine James, Bob Tallman, Mike Servi, worthy of mention for all the reasons. So,
but you know what I found interesting on the Leon Coffey deal, which kind of made me chuckle. And I don't know what's going on here. It could be one of those situations where, congratulations, Leon, you're retiring. We're really proud of the 49 years you've been in the barrel, and you're fantastic, and thank you, and here's your buckle, and then I see him on the local news of Houston going, I ain't retiring. I ain't done yet. I just ain't going to be in the barrel. I'm still going to be clowning here. I'm getting that check.
They did make a point. They did make the point to say that. Just like they did, they said, you know, he'll still be here as part of our family. Just like at the timed event, 40th annual timed event at the Lazy E the other day, same went for Bob Tallman. Bob Feist has announced that forever. They brought in little brother Anthony Lucia to join Justin McKee. So they retired Bob at the microphone, but made also, like with Leon, a point to say, Bob's not going anywhere. He's still going to be here with us. He's just going to be in a different capacity. So
I ain't retiring. I'm just not getting in the barrel. I don't like it anymore. I'm 70 years old and it hurts.
So there was another rodeo you wanted to kick around here.
Which one was it?
Kid Rock.
Oh, yeah. So I thought this was interesting. So this, now the talk is about the Kid Rock rodeo. So I talked to a very significant PBR executive, and I said, any chance you guys could tell us what the hell's going on with that event? Like, how does it work? I mean, I see hundreds of posts a day where you guys are promoting Kids Rock, Rock and Rodeo, but do you do understand most of us out here have no idea? Oh, we know it's a team event, which is unique since you do teams. But, oh, and you pick teams. That's cool. Oh, but how does it work? And that what I got told was the official ground rules are under review and will be released in a week. So I'm going to bring up a few things. It's like, isn't it April or May?
At AT&T? May 17th, I feel like. May 17th in conjunction with the PBR World Finals.
So everybody competes at the same time in two separate arenas. So I understand that Prefert is building this setup currently out at their factory in Texas, and they're going to start testing. So technically speaking, what I heard is they're working on making both of the gates on both ends open at the same time. Well, I'm not a rocket scientist, but are you working on making guys not at the same time? But I'm glad the gates will open at the same time. But and I don't know whether, you know, Sean Gleason pushes a button and that means you go. So maybe when we get the ground rules, we'll see that. And it's bracket style. So your team moves forward, collective points. I mean, again, I'm really interested in understanding the ground rules for two reasons. One is if it's so complicated that rodeo people can't figure it out, I got a problem with it, right? Because a normal fan won't have any idea except that the announcer told him this guy's advancing. And I told this particular PBR, they're giving away gold medals. Well, that's original. We do it at Salt Lake. Thanks for copying. They're going to give away gold and silver medals. But here's what I think's cool. Kid Rock is very invested in this. And again, that's a good thing. He's an interesting figure that loves this. He likes this. They want to do it in the future. I just want to understand what it's about, how it works, right? And can we follow it? Because I've heard about the teams. Bobby Moat's got a team that's all VR points people. And, you know, and I heard that all the coaches were super excited. I just hope it. So here's the deal. When you produce shows, you have some really good ideas when you're sitting at your desk. And then you take them into the arena. And you're like, whoa. Kendra, you were probably there. My big one was when I put Ty Murray in a giant rubber balloon to introduce him. And I thought it was going to look really cool, and it looked really stupid. He looked like a Ty Murray embryo that popped out of fire. And it was our last balloon, by the way, because he kept popping them on purpose in rehearsals. And so, but sometimes these really good ideas, and I'm not saying that this is the case here, they don't translate into something that's palatable to watch and to understand. So that's what I know.
Well, okay. And of course, I'm going straight to the bottom line. How much the winners win? And did I hear right that each person on the winning team wins $25,000? Is that correct?
The coach wins $25,000. The head person wins $25,000. Let me look. I can tell you the payout here. It's pretty. So it's a team composition, 16 athletes on each team, 8 disciplines, 2 athletes in each discipline, right? On each team. There'll be 4 rounds. 1, 2, and 3 are elimination. Round 4 is the overall event champion. It's bracketed. There's a shootout round for the gold medal. I don't really know that, but here's the deal. Total winning team, the team of Cowboys that ends, gets $500,000. And that's broke out to $27,777 for every team member, the head coach, and the assistant coach. And then everybody that comes to that event is getting a $4,000 appearance fee. Everybody.
$4,000. Okay, well, so there's been just little bits and pieces. I'm listening to you and I'm like, okay, so I've asked a lot of questions too. And I do owe somebody 30 minutes from the PBR. I told them, yes, that I would take 30 minutes to listen because I'm curious like you. And again, a new chance for money, something new. Like, I think our eyes are wide open. Like, yes, more money. Let's see. One thing I heard about the draft was that one coach traded other draft picks to Sid Steiner. So Sid Steiner got the absolute first pick, and he picked Rocker. Did you hear that?
I did hear. I didn't know how he got the first pick, but I did hear he picked
Rocker. And then another thing that I thought was really interesting was that some of the coaches did more homework than other of the coaches. And for example, in the barrel race, you know, you would just at face value from the world standings or who's been hot or whatever, you might pick certain people in the barrel race. But my understanding now is that some of the people that were picked after finding out how it's going to work and that they might have to make like multiple running at the same time as other people, multiple runs in a day and all this kind of stuff, running back into the box or whatever it is, some of those people are like, hell no, I'm not doing that. So picks were spent on people, and some of the people who did more homework and actually called all these people that were that had put themselves eligible for the draft, and then it was like, are you willing to run your horse two or three times in an afternoon?
So
are you
willing to run? They didn't get a commitment from the athletes in the draft?
Before the draft?
Yeah. So you're telling me that before the draft, they didn't ask all the contestants that were in the draft pool if they were coming?
I'm just telling you that I got that out of the mouth of one of the coaches who said, so-and-so picked this one person, and after finding out more of how it's going to actually go logistically, she said, hell no, I'm not doing it.
Make sure that all the Cowboys are willing to come before you put them in the draft.
Well, I mean, anyway, but okay, here's another one that I've heard through the grapevine, that some high-ranking, high-profile contestants, I'll say one I heard was Zeke Thurston, didn't, maybe even Keenan Hayes, I'm not sure about him. Zeke Thurston, for sure, I'm told, did not, like, know about it or whatever, did not, like, register for the draft. And so didn't get picked. But so heads up, baseball, perfectly legal, right? The top two from the WCRA's Corpus Christi is who ends up on.
How come you keep having balloons go in front of your face?
I have no idea. Okay. So
I'm sorry. It's very distracting.
It's a beautiful day, but there's no balloons. Anyway.
It's happy.
So heads up, baseball is now, if the top two from Corpus Christi in May before the Kid Rock Rodeo are on your team, Bobby Mote and Lindsey Sumter, well, then you might make, you're very motivated to make sure Zeke Thurston, if humanly possible, shows up at Corpus Christi, right? Because he'd be a badass person on your team, but you're kind of legally working, navigating the system, right?
Well, we've got to get to the bottom of it, because what you just said contradicts what I just made fun of them for. I said, post-it note, maybe your Cowboys. Well, if they had to register for the draft, then that tells me that the people that you're saying that have decided not to play must have registered, which it could be that they just weren't informed of everything that was required.
That's what it sounds like. And all people did, my understanding, was just say, they just threw their name in the hat to be drafted. They didn't sign anything saying, I'll be there with bells on. They just said, I'm putting myself in the hat to be drafted.
Well, so I don't want to be negative, and I'm glad that Kid Rock, I'm glad this is happening. So I hope that the people out there, they're listening. But I just think you have to be really careful. The American learned this the hard way. A lot of other events are. It is very important that the details are tended to, because when they're not, you lose credibility. And when you lose credibility, that takes you one step away from sport and one step closer to circus. That's all I'm going to say. Devil's in the details. Oh, we don't have enough on the team, so you go pick four people. We got to have them. All right. Kendra, Is that everything you got in your holster today?
I have a before we go thing. It's going to put you in a corner, but is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about before I do
Greg,
that?
Greg, you got anything on your mind? She puts me in a corner because now I'm squeaking out a little bit.
No, I want to see this.
Okay, the last time I did this to you, of course, was, the NFR significant others, you know, wives and in some cases husbands of barrel racers, not being able to get close at the back number ceremony, and I put you on the spot, and I will major kudos. You delivered. You went through all the proper channels and got it figured out, and those people were so grateful. So here we go. Something somewhat similar but completely different. You can tell us more about it because I was not aware of it. But my basic understanding is that there is a bonus for the high money winners at Days of 47 in Salt Lake City, Ogden and Spanish Fork from last summer. $15,000 for the high money woman, which is Jordan Briggs. $15,000 for the high money man, which my understanding is was won by team ropers Tyler Wade and Wesley Thorpe, who would then split the $15,000 and get $7,500 a man. My understanding is maybe this banquet is April 10th. So here's where I got a call from Mr. T. Wade, who's awesome human, and he has a baby due that week. So he did call and say, hey, how well do you know Tommy Joe Lucia? I really hate to leave my very pregnant wife when she's about to have our baby girl that week. And so I'm just throwing it out there. Is it must be present to win, or how does that work? Because I know nothing of what I'm talking about.
Okay, well, you got most of the facts correct. So that's not bad for a journalist being in the press. There is a $15,000 bonus to that money man and that money woman collective earnings from those three rodeos that we call the Utah Pioneer Week, where we distribute money between the three rodeos to make it a $2 million week up there. And so this bonus was a part of the program. And annually, there's a Utah State of Sports banquet that the governor puts on, and it salutes all of the sports athletes that participated or were from Utah for that year. So Tony Finau, Olympians, it's just cool. And they all come to the Delta Center in Salt Lake City for this banquet, where there's 150 high-profile state and local people that buy tables to watch this live presentation. This particular bonus was in conjunction with the Utah State of Sports. So we're doing the presentation at the banquet. Originally, when written, what we said was, here's the bonus. It's $15,000. You must accept it in person at the awards banquet because that's what the Utah State of Sports would prefer. And if not, it would go to second place. Then I get a call and said, he weighed expecting a baby, da, da, da. And I'm like, that's terrible. So here's what we landed on.
It's great that they're having a baby girl to go with their little boy, but go ahead.
That is
That's cool. terrible was your response. Go ahead.
What we landed on is we're going to give 25. We said if you can't make it, we're going to give $2,500 of the bonus to you. And if you can work it out in your personal schedule to show up, you can get the full $7,500. Now, here's the way I look at it, whether you like me about it or not. It's a bonus. This is good money bonus that is coming in conjunction with your win. It's not a part of the official earnings. And so we think that's fair. You know, I didn't want to say, sorry, you're having a baby. You can't get anything. So $2,500 is better than a quick kick in the shorts if you don't show up. If they can work it out. And by the way, we're paying their airfare, their hotel room. Like it's tell us when you can come. We're putting you on a plane at our expense. We're flying you in for a really cool evening where you're standing by Olympians and Paralympians. I mean, it's a cool night. Now I understand if he has the baby, you know, that's why it kind of hurt me. I'm like, I don't want to take all the money away, but I still need to have some incentive. Because the flip side of that, Kendra, is if we just give them the $15,000 and they don't have to come, you and I both know they'll never come. They'll never have time. Someone will always have a problem. That's a big problem in their life. And we need them to show up to accept this money. Does that make sense?
That's fair. And I'll say for those two guys, they won first at both Ogden and Spanish Fork. So that was pretty cool. I mean, they already pocketed some great money out of that little trio of rodeos. So, you know, that whatever you can do, it sounds like you're being as fair as you can possibly be. I said I'd ask, you listened, and you're trying to work with them. So that's
we're aware. And we've got to do, you know, we want that money to keep coming, right? And it's important that someone, you know, that we're representing our cowboy sport in that space, in that time. And we're trying to be fair, but balance out everything so that that $15,000 bonus, which I think is pretty cool, because originally we talked about $2,500 bonuses, but $15,000, Kendra, right? Just that's really good for entry fees for the summer of 24.
Right on. Yes. Okay. Well, thank you. And I do have one last thing that I would love to say, that again goes back to our mental health conversation. The bravest, the coolest, most appreciated thing for me on social media this week was Chad Field, Casey's big brother, Louie and Veronica's firstborn child.
President and CEO of Warbonnet Hats.
Yes. An amazing young man, husband and father, Ren Richard's brother-in-law. I mean, I can't say enough. He's a great guy. Going on live Instagram and speaking openly of how it is three and a half years after he wrecked a plane with his wife and friends in it and had very severe injuries, and speaking really openly about the depression, about still having no bladder or bowel, you know, control. And he was like an open book, speaking of really painful, serious mental health issues, and that like he's trying a new medication to try to deal with it. And I just thought it was the bravest thing I've seen anybody do lately. And I have no idea, because I haven't spoken to him, if it has anything to do with the opening of this conversation. But I will say, you know, the Fields are from Utah, and we've had, you know, some heartache and a big loss from Utah recently. I don't know if that's related or not. I kind of got the vibe maybe it was, but how much respect I have for that family anyway. But for him to come out and talk about, I mean, who wants to talk about, you know, whether or not, you know, he's talked of having to wear a diaper, you know, does a big strong man want to talk about that? You know, no. But the fact is, he's dealing with it. And, you know, there's so many people dealing with things. But I just thought, man, how amazing of him to do that. So I just say that.
That's cool. That's really cool. Well, you said it, and we've all endorsed it. Being tough is also being compassionate and tough enough to say you need help or reach out. Like, it goes on both sides of the street, I believe. If you're going to be unselfish, if you're a friend, it's easier to run away from conflict than to walk into a room and make it right. It just is. It's easier to say, I'll just never talk to them again because they may be mad. Where it takes a tough person, right, to try to fix. Listen, so I'm with you, Kendra. And I'm going to Warbonnet. They're going to do a custom hat for me. That family's cool, and his battles have been real. And you're right. He's like, a pattern of cool. Absolutely.
Really? Yep.
Greg, anything on your crazy hair look day?
No, just getting ready. Spent a lot of time today getting everything going for the show tomorrow, and just looking forward to another solid weekend of good TV.
Okay, everybody. Well, thank you on behalf of one of the smartest people in pro rodeo, myself. He thought I was going to say you, Kendra. No. On behalf of the amazing, on a serious note, the amazing Kendra Santos and the smartest guy I actually do know, Greg Teagarden, and myself, the little fat Texan from Texas and Utah, thank you for listening to us. Tune in 2 weeks. We'll come up with another hour of water cooler talk, and maybe you'll learn something you didn't know about yourself or about the sport of rodeo. Till we meet again, be safe out there.